Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Oh, crap. All right.
What's going on, guys? Forgive us for the next minute. We're just, it's a long story. We're having all kinds of technical issues today because neither one of us are where we're supposed to be. we are going to do us a favor right now if you're tuning in and help us share this video. Share it everywhere because that's what we're doing. Because we are a party of the people, for the people, by the people. We're just, oh shit, Facebook crashed on me again.
All right.
Right as I was hitting the share button.
As long as YouTube, or wait, what are we on? Zoom?
Yeah, it's recording, so it'll, yeah, no, the stream didn't break, just the page view. Facebook is such a mess.
It is the worst.
That's one of those things like, you know, I hate executive orders, but yeah, Facebook's getting shut down.
Oh, sorry, man. Zuck.
Yeah, Zuck's getting zucked.
You're getting zucked.
All right.
Let's see here.
So we're just delaying right now because we are sharing this as we speak into different groups. So tune in, get settled in, put it on the Bluetooth so you can make your wife listen while we watch. So we got some interesting topics because one thing that I admire about Joshua is he put out a video a while ago talking about promoting and advertising and this sort of thing, which is that's something that I've been fascinated with for a while. I've run like a digital marketing company for a while. I was helping mostly criminal defense lawyers. Yeah, I know everybody hates lawyers. That's something I really got into for a while. And of course, I have the Taxation is Theft store, and I apply everything I know to that. And of course, I'm applying it to my presidential campaign, which in my opinion is doing pretty awesome. But so I saw Josh talk about this, Joshua, excuse me. I was like, hey, that's awesome. I really like that because that is what the Libertarian Party is missing. So, yeah, let's talk about that, man. Why is it so important?
Well, I mean, we can't convince anybody to come and join our cause if we can't even entice them with our like first marketing phase. You know, it doesn't work. You know, if people, you know, show up to your branding and it's boring and you don't have people doing any kind of, you know, research to get media appearances, and you don't have anybody who's ready to do media appearances, it's just like, oh, I'll just go back to the two old parties. You know, they run marketing campaigns all the time. But I've talked a lot about creating what I like to call the media hit squad, right? Like that was my big thing I wanted to last year, but everyone told me I probably shouldn't call it that anymore. So now I'm calling it a regional media team. I'd like to have, you know, look, the national party has 8 regions, right? And so if we had one person in each region of this country that was constantly looking for media opportunities and was also able to do media appearances on behalf of the party when they arise, And that night or the next night or whatever, instead of having one person trying to handle all this stuff, I mean, that would be a huge difference maker for us right away. You know, it gives us the opportunity to have someone like Larry Sharp in the Northeast region who can go on, you know, whatever media outlets he can find for us and talk about the party on behalf of the party. It's a great idea. You know, we have people in Southern California like Boomer Shannon, who's amazing, or Jeff Hewitt, who's amazing in the media. I mean, there's no reason why we can't do this. And I think it's something that we should have done a long time ago. And, you know, if we're not going to be aggressive with the media has no vested interest in us. They're not going to come talk to us unless we go and make them talk to us. And so, right. I just think that's a really good way to start marketing right away. And then we could talk about branding later on, you know, but I think we need to be ready for the media all the time.
Right. Yeah, no, that's something I do see a lot, where we have a lot of people that are saying the media is ignoring us, but then you ask them, like, these are candidates, and you ask them, well, have you reached out to the media? And the answer is no. So it's kind of like they're not just going to come get you. But of course, well, okay, look, it's not NBC, it's not CNN or anything like that. But I had a radio station reach out to me today, asking me for an interview. And it's not because, like, this isn't like it's just because I threw my name in the hat, so to speak. It's because I've been doing all this advertising and marketing, and so many people have seen the message that I'm putting out. And this is what gets people's attention. So there's two ways about it. One is you create the marketing, you create the brand, you get a lot of people to see it, including the media. But then the other way is to actually just reach out directly to the media. And that's worked so well, too. And yeah, I don't get a lot of responses from a lot of the big outlets. But as far as podcasts and everything else, there are a lot of people who do want to listen. And, you know, we need to go after all these avenues, too. But of course, it's the big one. So what do you see as like, how do we make this happen? Do we need to hire full-time staff that's their job to just go after media, monitor the media the whole time? Or what does that look like? Are they volunteers? Are they candidates?
Well, I think the end goal would be to have a media team that we pay. Unfortunately, the National Libertarian Party doesn't have the money to do that at this time. You know, I think we're running on something like it's much higher now, but it was like $1.3 million, which is just insane for a national political party. It's very hard to operate, especially when you have a headquarters that you got to keep the lights on and, you know, got AC units going down. I've talked a lot about that, but I think right now we have really great volunteers around the country that would be willing to do media appearances for us. You know, like I said, Larry Sharp, Boomer Shannon, Jeff Hewitt. If I call Jeff or Boomer or Larry and said, hey, man, CNN wants us to have a libertarian go on behalf of the party to this. Not a single one of those people is going to be like, no way. You know, they're going to do it. And they'd be happy to do it. I'm sure of it. You know, and I can't really speak for them, but I know them fairly well. And I know that they would probably be interested in doing something like that. So, I mean, we just find the right people. You know, we find the right people who have the right message, who we can trust with the media, and say, hey, man, let's start getting some media opportunities around the country in these regions and start, you know, making appearances on behalf of the party. And I just think that's really important. But eventually, yes, we would like to have a full-time media person that we pay that can do this stuff, but we have to grow first. It's just, you know, it's the inevitable. We have to grow. And we are, you know, this 2019 was the most growth the party's seen since 2005 in a non-presidential election year, which I think is huge. And that speaks volumes to what's going on right now. And whether you're upset with the current leadership and these people are joining to change it, or there's people who are fans of the presidential election nominees that are be coming up, like you and Furman and Kim Ruff and Jacob Hornberger, it's working, you know, and the party's growing and we're starting to see more activists and more money's coming in, which is really important. You know, like, I can't stress this enough. We can't operate as a national political party without money. You just can't do it.
Right.
You know, as that stuff starts to come, yeah, that's going to be the goal. But right now we need to focus on how do we get into the media, because they're not coming to us. They don't care about us. We seek to end the greed and graft that they, you know, feed on. So, but I'd also like to create like focused marketing campaigns as well for the party. You know, whether it be something, you know, an awesome graphic with a cool hashtag, or, you know, like when I'm the chair of the affiliate support committee for the National Party, we put out this LP Everywhere challenge to people. And basically we're like, hey, we got $1,000. Whoever can get the best earned media and has the best photos, mm-hmm. whatever affiliate you're from, we're going to give you $1,000 for winning that challenge. Right. And so we were able to get that kind of passed around. I think that video that I made got seen by like some 15,000 people or something, which is not bad, you know. But if we had someone working at the National Party, you know, like Jess Mears, who's wonderful at these kind of things, that said, hey, this is the new marketing campaign. We're going to run this for the next month. Let's push it down to the states and let the states push it down to the county level or the local level, and we all put it out at the same time, I mean, now we're in front of millions of people around the country with the same focused marketing campaign. And so those kind of things are really important to you know, political parties. That, you know, the Republicans had, was it the Republicans had the walk away marketing campaign? I mean, that thing did work wonders for them. And the Dems have like the get out and vote campaign, which was huge here in California. I mean, they probably signed up a million new voters, Democratic voters, just because they decided to make a focused marketing message that they could push down to all their affiliates. And it really made a big difference. So I'd like to start working on some stuff like that from the National Party as well, on top of the aggressive media strategy.
Right.
And then, you know, we start getting in front of people, and that's what we got to do.
Yeah. That's, I mean, this is like, so everybody blames like Facebook and Trump and all this stuff and the Russians for what he did. But it's like, if you look at what he did and you break it down, it's really not that complicated. It really is just, you break people into groups, you give them a message that they're going to bite on because they're in that group, and you just do this for like as many different groups as you can and get out the vote. It's a young people. I looked at the statistics for this. 25, it's like every year, right? Because I guess older people are dying and younger people are becoming able to vote. 25% of the voters are always between like 18 and 25. And then the next 25 is between 25 and 35 or 25 and 45, something like that. So like 50% of the voters are all like under 35 or 40. And it's like that's like the okay boomer thing. Like those are the young people. And if you target a message directly at them, like what the Democrats do, especially what they do with like MTV and all that shit, that's exactly what you're doing. And it really isn't that difficult. And especially with, I mean, when we're talking about reaching millions of people, it's really not that expensive. Like $10,000, you can reach a million people with video ads on YouTube or Facebook, which is like, oh yeah, but we hate those platforms and we don't want to give them money. But it's like, it doesn't matter. Like the idea is you spend the least amount of money to get in front of the most number of people as you possibly can to get this message. And that those are people seeing the message. And then it's not only that, it's you got to hit them with that repetition, right? Like
sure.
The first time you see a Nike ad is just like somebody running and it says Nike. You're like, okay, whatever. But the fact that they have it plastered all over New York City, so wherever you walk, it's Nike, 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 Nike. Once you've seen that ad 20 times, all you're thinking about is Nike or Coca-Cola or Adidas or whatever it is. And you're buying that stuff. And that's just how it works. And
sure.
Is it manipulative? In a way, yes. But at the same time, if you're using that against what the other parties are doing for evil, is that really a bad thing? I mean, is it
no,
really
and it's well, and we're just trying to get our message out, right? We're not trying to get anyone to buy anything. You know, we're not trying to get them to spend their money on us. I mean, we would like you to give us your money.
Right.
Don't get me wrong, we need money, but essentially what we want is for people to know who our candidates are. We want people to vote for our candidates. We want people to understand that libertarian philosophy and policy, more importantly in politics, libertarian policy can enrich your life, right? And so they don't know that. You know, 61% of the population in 2016 didn't vote for a presidential candidate. 61%. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people in this country.
That's not just 61%. Like that doesn't include
of voting age people.
Eligible voters, right.
Did not vote for a presidential candidate in 2016. They didn't vote for those two parties because they don't like those two parties. But they probably a large percentage of those people didn't even know that there was a Libertarian Party candidate. They didn't even know that there was a Green Party candidate. They thought there's two parties. That's all we have to deal with. I'm jaded on this system. I'm done with it. I'm going to stay home. It doesn't matter if I vote anyways. But now they log in a couple days before the election. They see the Libertarian Party. They go, huh, what's this? They look at our platform. That makes a difference for us, you know, and whether those people become long-term activists in the Libertarian Party or not, it doesn't make much difference. They know who we are now. They'll start looking at our candidates. They may come around and start giving us money, and then they may become an activist for the party. They may become a candidate themselves. You know, it's all a big trickle-down thing, and it starts with marketing. It starts with media. So it's got to be important for us. It's got to be a big focus for us.
Right. So anybody who's watching, we are live right now. Well, unless you're watching the recorded version later, but if you're watching it right now, it's live. Ask your questions. If you got questions, go ahead and throw them out there. What do you think? I'm gonna ask you this, because this came kind of as a surprise. But not really. Like, we've seen this guy. He's been kind of showing up all over the place, as a keynote speaker, as this and that. He just recently became a libertarian. And everyone's like, oh, he's going to run. But of course, he's saying, no, I'm not running. And then today, or was it today or yesterday, he announced that he's actually running.
I don't think did he ever actually announce, or did he just file with the FEC and news outlets ran with it? I think that's what it was. I never really saw an announcement from him, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, that might have been it. And that, of course, pisses me off, too, because it's like, hey, what about all the other guys who filed?
Sure.
Which, and I know this is going to be used as, like, you know, one of his things is everyone's going to say, yeah, but look how much press he got and he wasn't even trying. And it's yeah, okay. And I'll be honest, I don't know a whole lot about the guy. I've seen some of his voting record and some other stuff. So I don't want to talk shit about him and put him down. But it's like, I don't want this to turn into like another, we're selecting the wrong candidate for the wrong reasons. If, you know, the guy just became a libertarian, how libertarian is he actually? And does he really agree with the platform, or is he just kind of shape-shifting? So, sure. And I know your position, it's going to be difficult for you to comment on some of this, but yeah, what's your opinion of all of this?
So, you know, I have my own, I'm an individual as well outside of being an at-large for the Libertarian National Committee, and I have my own thoughts on all the presidential candidates. I mean, and truth be told, as an LNC member, I've probably looked at all of you guys more than most of the board members. You know, I don't know if you're aware, but a couple months back, I emailed probably 20 different media people to try and get you guys interviews. It wasn't like, you know, I was trying my hardest. We didn't get any of them. I think I got one email back from the Jim Jeffries publicist or whatever, but it never ended up going anywhere. But so look, here's the thing. I welcome Lincoln to the party. I'm happy that he paid his dues and became a member. I think he's shooting a little high. And I think that this year there's going to be a lot of delegates who feel burned by the 2016 election and what Bill Weld kind of did after, you know, not getting that 5% and kind of sticking around for a while and taking off. I think they're going to look to those past issues and have a problem with somebody doing the same thing this year. I think this is the year we get a radically principled candidate who's going to do a 50-state media tour after they get the nomination and create more libertarians. And I look forward to that. You know, that's kind of what I want to see. So I welcome them to the suck. I just don't see that candidate getting the nomination this year.
All right. So, yeah, and, you know, you bring up a good point about Weld. But at the same time, you've got Gary Johnson, who's, I guess, he's still registered as a libertarian, I guess, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think Gary will stay a libertarian forever.
But he's kind of quieted down. He's, you know, like,
sure.
Where is he? What's he doing? And that's
kind of. We ran in 2018, he ran for U.S. Senate as a libertarian in New Mexico.
That's right.
And he still does some stuff with our American Initiative, I believe. And he does some stuff here and there and does some endorsements and stuff, but I think he's just kind of retiring from politics altogether. Yeah. Really. I don't know. I haven't talked to Gary, you know, so I couldn't tell you. It's all speculation, but it just seems like Gary was in politics for so long that he just got fed up with it. And probably now he wants to smoke some dank and ride bikes and climb mountains.
Not in politics when I got fed up with it.
Yeah, exactly. I got fed up with politics and got involved. So, I mean, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, it is crazy how we all got here. And it's so interesting because I talk to so many people that are in this for different reasons. Let me ask you this. We have. So right now, most of the people they vote Democrat or Republican. we have, you know, the 61% you talked about who didn't vote, but realistically, we're not going to get this, what is it, like probably 100 million people off the couch to go vote. I mean, we might get a percentage of it. We might get 20, 30, 40%, but we're not going to get all of them. And that might not be enough to win. We need the support from Democrats and Republicans. So is there anything that you've figured out on how do we capture that audience? How do we get these people that are supporting these other parties specifically? I mean, like, you know, and I know we have like some of the libertarian socialists who are in the group who are, you know, I wouldn't say they're, I mean, they definitely don't support a Bernie Sanders type platform, but we have the left, we have the right, and we have to figure out how do we convince some of these people that libertarianism is better to get them onto our side to support us against the duopoly.
Well, I think we have to focus on the youth. I mean, we can't be going after some of these, you know, 60 to 85 year old Republicans and Democrats. They're not coming. They're not. We are lying to ourselves if we think we are ever going to make those people libertarians. They've been stuck in their ways for a long time. They are tribalistic, chest beating, team sport people. You know, that's what it's about. We're seeing that right now with the GOP. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing that old boomer crowd and some of the Gen Xers, and they don't care what Trump does. All they care about is that their team wins. So we got to reach out to the youth, man, because the youth on both of those sides, they can still be convinced, you know. So I think if we're looking at current old party members and voters and we're trying to figure out how we're going to bring them over, you got to be principled. You have to show that you're different than those parties and that you're principled and that you actually have the courage of your convictions. And you have to bring new innovative marketing styles, you know, because it's not about calling people on the phone when they're getting ready to sit down and eat dinner anymore, like politics used to be. You know, it's about getting on your computer. It's about having a cool text app. It's about sending awesome emails that hook people and making cool videos. You know, videos are so big now. You know, rappers. Okay, I'm gonna talk about rappers and somehow involve them in politics here. Rappers don't make money off their music anymore, right? It's done. They don't make money off their music anymore. They make money off of shows and music videos because everybody watches videos on their computer and their phone all day long. So we should be making an overabundance of content and media content. That we should have a YouTube channel for the National Libertarian Party right now that has 1 million followers. There's no reason why we shouldn't have done this years ago, because that's how we're going to make a big difference, you know? And so I think we need to come up with these new, fresh, innovative marketing ideas and really sit down and round table them and figure out how we're going to move forward. But we have to reach out to the youth. The two old parties, if we're ever going to take anybody from those parties, it's going to be young people, 50 and under, at least. I'm probably that's shooting a little high, probably 35 or 40 and under. That's it. But the other side of that coin is there is 61% of the population that didn't vote for a presidential candidate in 2016. And those are our people. Those are the people like us who are jaded with the duopoly, completely done with them. They don't think their voice matters anymore. We need to show them that there is a party that has their principles and their concerns and can enrich their lives. And so if we're not doing that, we're failing, because we're never going to steal enough from the Republicans and the Democrats to actually compete with them. It's always going to be about bringing new people to the party, people that are new to politics, people that are fed up with politics. And I think, you know, I don't really always use this term, but I think the bottom unity thing that Mike Shipley talks about a lot and the Audacious Caucus and the Lib Socs. And I think some of that is really true. I think that's, you know, if we can kind of coalesce around a message and stop the infighting all the time, a lot of these people are gonna be like, hey, you know, this party ain't so bad. Maybe I'll come hang out with these guys. And so I think that's a somewhat important point that Mike makes a lot. And so I'm not opposed to it as I used to be. I still hold true to I don't want anybody to have a seat at our table that is a violent authoritarian, period.
Right.
I don't think they belong here. Yeah. I think they muddy our message. So, but I mean, if somebody's, you know, whatever, wants voluntary, whatever, I don't care. As long as it's voluntary.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, And there were a couple of those violent people in that group.
I think we've run them mostly off, though. Thank God.
Yeah, exactly. which is great. But what's like, I had a couple of these guys on my show a while back, and it was actually really interesting to talk to them and get their perspective on, you know, and after talking to a couple of them, I was like, you know, I really wouldn't call you a libertarian socialist. I'd call you like an anarchist humanitarian, maybe.
Sure. I've come around to just basically calling everything voluntarism at this point. Yeah. I think that's better for us. I think if we can coalesce around a message of voluntarism, we can stop with all these crazy constant adjectives and just be like, yo, I'm a voluntarist libertarian, and that's it. And I want a voluntary society. I don't want people to be forced or thrown in prison for victimless crimes, or you know, I don't want to fight all these endless wars around the country. You know, if we're on the same page there, we're voluntarists and we should work together. And that's, you know, that's kind of where I've come to in the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's, I mean, so of course, everybody always asks me like, wait, so you want to get rid of all taxes? And I really kind of, that is really kind of where I put in this voluntarism point, because I like to say like, look, taxes are coercive, right? You're giving money at gunpoint. If you don't give them the money, they're going to take it by force. And all I'm saying is, if the government's doing a good job, they can sell their services, they can raise money, they can sell bonds, they can have lotteries, they can do, there's a million different ways for them to raise money. They just can't do it by pointing a gun at people and saying, give it to me or else. And sure. That's kind of that same system. It's like, if we can evolve into even just thinking about how to, like, considering how is this possible? Then it starts to make sense, because like right now it's just like, well, how are we going to get the money? Oh, well, we'll raise taxes. And like, that's always as far as that conversation goes.
Every time.
Yeah. And it's like, we'll like, basically what they're saying is we'll steal more. Problem solved. And it's like, no, if you want to have a society where you're not abusing people, you need to actually think, okay, how do we turn this into an operational model where people will like what we're doing for them and they will voluntarily give us their money? So, and, you know, some people jump from that into like, oh, so people are just going to make donations, crowdfunding? No, like the courts, even the courts, when you want to sue somebody, the courts are charging a user fee for that. And like, if somebody sues McDonald's for $10 million, well, let the court take a percentage, right? Sure. I mean, there's so many different ways to like, and it doesn't have to be that way, but it's like, there's so many different ways to look at it and so many different revenue streams that the government could possibly have. But we're always just like, oh, just raise taxes. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, and that's, you know, I've talked a lot about this. You know, I'd like to see welfare and those sort of things that people really worry about all the time. I'd like to see the government, you know, if we say we get libertarians in a government, right? Like, you know, federal government, and we start talking about abolishing programs. Everybody that I talk to, that's like, so you want to abolish welfare? You want to abolish healthcare? You want to abolish, like, first of all, welfare is probably not the first thing I'm going to abolish on my first day in office. I don't want people to die, you know? So if we're talking about welfare, I want to treat it like we treated the post office, right? Because let's be honest, if the post office was abolished tomorrow, none of us would care. Literally none of us, because they open up the market, they let other businesses compete, and we got things like UPS, FedEx, DHL, all these great businesses that are cheaper, more efficient, they pay their employees really well, and they, you know, unless you're caught in a police shootout, it's a pretty decent job, you know, and people make good money doing it, and it's a service that we need. So if the post office was to go out of business tomorrow, we might have to find a new place to buy our stamps, but we're really not going to care that much.
Here's a you know, fact. The federal government has banned the private delivery of mail. So there's this thing called the Parcel Express Statutes. And basically it makes it a felony to deliver mail. Lysander Spooner, I don't know if he created this first or they used this to put him out of business, but he created a post office in like the late 1700s where he was delivering mail faster and cheaper than the post office, and they shut him down.
Of course they did. Why? That's how they make money off the post office. Tons of money off the post office.
And the only reason UPS is allowed to do it is because there's two exceptions. One is parcels and one is expedited letters, which is why you can send letters, but they're overnight. So And it's like, why are these companies even in business? Well, because they're doing a better job than the post office. Even with like a limited section of the market, they're able to do better.
So my point that I was trying to make is I'd like to treat welfare like that, right? All right, we're not going to abolish welfare tomorrow, right? So let's open up the market and stop regulating all these charities completely out of the market within their first year, like the government does now, and see if they work. And if they do work, then we don't need welfare anymore because the market's handling it in the way that helps people probably much more efficiently than what the government's doing currently. Because if you've ever lived on welfare, I haven't. I know lots of people that have. My mom was on it briefly when we were little kids. It's not enough to live on, you know? It barely scrapes your needs, barely. And so, you know, I think that we don't need all these government services, and there's a better way to do things. And if it's crowdsourced, it's crowdsourced. If it's through charity, it's through charity. If it's, you know, there's other ways to do things besides coercion with a gun to your head and the threat of going to jail.
And the main libertarian thing is always, we just want to leave you alone, right? But to somebody who's like, wait a minute, I'm 64, I'm going to be retiring soon. You want to shut down Social Security? That doesn't sound like you're leaving me alone.
Sure.
But what's interesting about that is, because like I've been trying to figure that one out too. Like it's free money.
It is.
How do you get people out of that with? Because my form of messaging is saying, instead of like trying to push you into like, instead of like selling you on all these fears why government's gonna fall apart and the apocalypse is coming, and the government's gonna collapse. Instead of pushing that, what I like to do is I like to figure out, okay, how can I take you down a path that you want to go down because something's in it for you? And so I'm looking at Social Security and I'm thinking like, okay, is it possible that we can sell people on, you know, look at somebody who's on Social Security now. Their life is not wonderful, right? A lot of people are barely getting enough money to just scrape by. Some people still have to get jobs to work when they're that old. They're still paying property tax. Sometimes they get some sort of an exemption, but they're still paying property tax, they're still paying income tax, all these other taxes, and they're supposed to be, the government's supposed to be helping them out at this point. And it's like, if you were to say, okay, look, if you were to not ever pay into the Social Security system and you were to put it into like a 401k or something instead, and you just show them the alternative and say, if you did this instead, you'd be able to retire when you're 50.
Yeah.
You'd be able to give a nice life to your kids. When you die, you'd be able to own a house and give that to your kids that they would live in rent free so that they wouldn't be struggling so hard. Show them this path and say, this is the path that your life could be if you abandon Social Security and all these other welfare and all these other government programs and stop giving them taxes. And live your own life, invest in yourself. Sure. And I think that's kind of the direction, that's kind of the image that we need to paint for people to see that, like, yeah, hey, that does sound a lot better than these programs that, I mean, they keep telling me they're going to fix it and they're going to give us more money, but yeah, they've been saying that for what, 100 years now. So is that really going to happen ever? Probably not.
No, not ever. And eventually it'll fold on itself. I mean, Social Security will probably eventually just completely fold on itself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a sustainable thing.
How many times? I mean, Obama did it twice, I think, where he said, like, we're not going to have enough money.
At least twice, yeah.
And it's going to continue to happen. And, yeah, they were able to pull the money out of their ass from somewhere and make it happen. But
just got to raise the ceiling. Damn.
Yeah, but like how many, like eventually it's going to get worse. It's going to get harder to do that. They're going to say, okay, look, we're going to raise the debt ceiling, but we're going to make the payments, but we're going to have to cut the payments by like 10 or 20%. And they're going to start doing stuff like that. And it's like, what can you do? There's no guarantee. I mean, the government says everything's 100% guaranteed. There's no safer investment than the United States government, but come on, really?
Sure. Sure. There's not.
Yeah, it's
Tell that to the Middle East.
yeah. It's mind-blowing. But yeah, I think that's kind of the path that we need to go in waking people up to that reality of
Political parties.
transition. Yeah.
No, I agree. I think it's great. You know, it's I talk a lot about this with our candidates. I mean, you have to go out there and show your constituents how our policies can enrich their lives. I mean, that's plain and simple. There's two, the smartest thing that Obama ever did was say there's two things that bring people to the ballot box: hope and change. That's it. You know, if we can show them that there's hope and that change is around the corner and it's helpful, people will vote for us. That's what we got to do. So I agree. Absolutely.
Yep, awesome. All right.
Racking the brain,
Yeah.
racking the brain.
Man. Well, so how's your race going? I know you're in a pretty, it's an interesting race. There have been a couple people who I guess were running and dropped out already.
Well,
Is that
one, Todd Hagopian. I always say his name wrong. Hagopian. I think he's Armenian, and I hate to pronounce his name wrong, but he's known as the Libertarian in Chief on Twitter. He's got a really large following. He threw his hat in the ring for a little bit and then dropped out and decided he was going to run for school board locally, which I think is great. You know, he was another guy who doesn't really have a lot of time with the party, hasn't really done a lot with the party. Really good businessman, and he's had a, you know, track record of turning around great businesses, and thought maybe that he could apply those skills to the Libertarian Party. But anybody who's been in party leadership knows that it's much different than turning around a business, this party.
Yeah.
Calling someone to raise money for a Fortune 500 company and calling somebody to raise money for a political ideology and party is much, much different.
Yeah.
People are more likely to give to a Fortune 500 company that's been somewhat successful at some point. So,
Yeah, there's no return on investment on this, right?
No, yeah, you don't get much right now,
Well,
but I
especially
think
this party,
it's coming. It's coming.
because we're like, this is not the party that's like, oh yeah, well, you know, say give me 10 million in donations and I'll make sure we go to war with Iran so you can sell some
Yeah,
weapons and make some money.
there's no quid pro quo here, man.
Yeah.
Not at all. But yeah, you know, he's a great guy, and he was running, and he dropped out and decided to do something locally, which I think is great. I'm super happy for Todd. I told him when he dropped out that, you know, I was bummed to hear it. I thought he brought a lot to the table. I would love to work with him on some of his ideas. Should I win the chairmanship? I would be interested in helping on his campaign if he needs help over there. I think he's a great guy. I think he's going to do good things, and he's going to bring a lot to the table for the Libertarian Party. Then there's me, and then there's Mike Shipley. Mike Shipley is one of the co-founders of the Libertarian Party Socialist Caucus. He's been an activist in the party for a long time in Arizona. I believe he was the chair of Outright Libertarians for a long time. Good. I like Mike. You know, me and Mike used to butt heads a lot. We don't butt heads nearly as much anymore. I've come to like Mike. I wish, you know, maybe he'd just apologize for calling me a Nazi once or twice. That'd be all right. I'd be cool with that, you know. And then me, I'm a current at-large representative for the Libertarian Party National Committee, and an at-large representative for the Libertarian Party California, the largest state affiliate in the country.
Which blows my mind because I'm from California, and I was looking at the delegate counts, and I was like, wait, th there has to be something wrong here. How's
107.
it's insane because I don't like I don't know anybody. I mean, I know a couple hippies, I know a couple gun nuts, but like I'm like there cannot be that many libertarians in
It's a
California.
lot. It's a lot of them here. And I mean, look, we have the highest elected Libertarian Party official in the state. I mean, Jeff Hewitt is
Right.
county supervisor of Riverside County. I mean, his constituency is bigger than like five other states. I believe that the budget for his county is like $2 billion, you know, and he's showing what his policies can do. He was the mayor of Calamasa first, which is a smaller city inside of Riverside County. And he was able to get like all the police officers and the firefighters off of their like PERS, like CalPERS retirements, right? Like these government, and get them all rolled into their own 401ks. And he basically saved the city from being bankrupt and showed his constituency what libertarian policy can do to enrich their lives. And so when he went to run for county supervisor, excuse me, he had trust in his community already. They already trusted him. They knew what he was doing. And so he got elected. And you know, that's the biggest elected official we have around the country right now. So California, we have a lot of libertarians. And I believe that, you know, a lot of people in California are just one step away from being libertarian anyways. You know,
just one more tax.
Yeah, right. I keep asking people, like, is it going to take 50% of your pay? Because I think we're close to that anyways. If you really add up all the taxes we pay here, between the property tax, the state tax, one of the highest sales taxes in the country, luxury tax, sin taxes. I mean, it doesn't stop here. Gas tax, one of the highest gas taxes in the country. Right. I mean, we're paying 50% of our pay, at least, in the taxes, at least. All of us, everybody, even the poor, right? And so I think, you know, that's why I asked him, like, how much more of this shit are you going to take, right? Like, are you guys going to continue to vote yourselves into more of this? Or are you going to realize that, you know, Gavin Newsom spending a bunch of money on whatever pet project, if you guys really wanted free education, maybe you should get the governor to stop spending money on that thing, you know? Because we had some crazy billions of dollars surplus when he took over from Jerry Brown. And I hated Jerry Brown too, but Jerry Brown was somewhat fiscally conservative, at least sort of. So they had like $69 billion surplus when Gavin Newsom came in the office after he got sworn in. And his first thing that he started talking about was he found out that there was about 30,000 people in California that didn't have access to clean drinking water. So they were going to put a tax on drinking water, an extra tax, to get these 30,000 people clean drinking water. And I'm going,
like bottled water?
Yeah, like an extra tax. And I'm going, you have a $69 billion surplus, and you're going to institute another tax to get 20,000 people clean drinking water instead of just saying, you know what, maybe we'll use a couple bucks from this $69 billion to get these people clean drinking water. It's just, it's insane. It's always another tax. Even if they have money, it's always another tax.
Ask, where were these people?
I don't know. I'd have to look at the whole thing.
Because like, this is something
I feel like that mind. Doesn't. I feel like they don't exist. I feel like it was all a big ruse to get more money.
I mean,
because I've lived in California my whole life, except for the 7 years I was in Oregon. I've lived in California almost my entire life, and I've lived all over California. And unless these people are living in a hut in Death Valley, like, I don't know where someone doesn't have clean drinking water in California.
Right, but it's like, it's okay. If I live in a city and I'm like, hey, I have this brilliant idea. I'm going to move into the middle of the desert and I set up a tent and I'm like, I don't have clean drinking water. Like, please, am I going to call the governor and be like, I brought a bunch of people down here with me. We don't have clean drinking water.
I think he was talking about Burning Man is what it was. He was talking about the folks at Burning Man don't have clean drinking water. Right? I really don't know. I've been all over California. There's pretty much nowhere in California that I haven't been. I've driven all over the state 100 times.
Yeah, it's not like a Flint situation. I mean, I would say they don't have clean drinking water anyway because they're putting fluoride in it, right?
Well, I don't know. I go back and forth on the fluoride issue anyways. I don't know. It's like somebody moved to the desert in a teepee and was like, hey, Papa Newsom, we need some clean drink water out here in the desert. It's like, maybe you should move back to, you know,
yeah,
where people live.
But it's a human right. It's crazy. Like, I kind of use this analogy a lot too, because like, people are like, when you're born into a city and it already has these things and you're paying taxes from the day you're born, then it's like you totally lose that perspective and everything becomes human right. And it's like, well, no, somebody had to build all this. There was originally nobody even here. Somebody moved there and said, hey, we need this. And they decided to build it themselves. And it's,
you have no basic human rights that forces another person to do something for you. None.
Right. Yeah. It's
all your basic human rights are things that you can do for yourself if you had to.
I mean, look, if you look at it the right way, being able to turn on your tap water and drink that is a fucking luxury. Cause I mean, like,
people didn't used to have that.
Yeah. You had to walk down to the river with a bucket.
Yeah.
Or like, maybe you didn't even have a bucket. You just had to walk down to the river every time you were thirsty.
Back then, you know, the rivers were clean enough you could drink right out of the damn things. But then you had to worry about Giardia every once in a while and, you know, some kind of stomach.
And what's fascinating is, like, I've been around Mexico a lot, and I've met people, like, I know people who have wells in the ground, and they pull their water out and they boil it before they drink it, and they make coffee. And, like, it's like, there are people who still live like that, but to Americans, like, no, that's a human right. We need, the government needs to, like, spend $1 million to make sure that I have a pipe going 10,000 miles to right to my house. It's insane.
Well, the crazy thing is in California, they've already built all that stuff. I mean, they have the aqueducts and all that. I mean, the infrastructure has been set here a long time, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The state's been inhabited for a long time, and it was, you know, one time one of the richest states in the country, you know? And so I don't understand it. It is what it is. I live here because I love California, not because I love the taxes and the politics. So. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, I want to give you an opportunity to plug anything that you want to plug, whether you've got a website for your campaign, plug the LP website, of course. Go for it.
Yeah, LP.org, man. You got to go to LP.org and sign up. But if you want to sign up for the party, go to joshsmithlp.com. That's actually my personalized link, and it helps me show how many people I've been able to bring to the party. And for those of you that don't know, I am the number one recruiter on the LNC currently this term. I've done really well, and myself, along with a lot of the podcasters that we've been able to bring in, are just killing it right now. Well, probably close to 2,000 new members since August. So it's really, really working out. If you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter. That's where I have a lot of fun. It's a cool place where you get to tag politicians all the time. So I have a lot of fun on Twitter. You can find me @Joshua@Large. On Facebook, it's just Joshua Smith LNC at large. I believe someone also made an LNC chair candidate page, Joshua Smith for LNC chair 2020. You can also find me on my personal page and hit me up anytime. I'm always willing to talk to folks and have phone calls and emails and whatever it is you guys want to do. I really appreciate it. But look, going into 2020, I've been laying out the solid blueprint for 2 years of things that I would like to see the National Libertarian Party do. I've been able to accomplish a lot of the things I talked about in 2018. I have become the largest recruiter for the party currently in national leadership because I'm doing the things I said I would in 2018. So I hope you guys will really give me a fair shake at the national convention in Austin in 2020 and really seriously consider letting me do everything that I've been doing on a grander scale.
Awesome. How do I get one of those links?
Get with me after this, and I'll get you in touch with Daniel Fishman. So if you wanted to do them with your podcast links, I don't know. I don't know how you would do that if you're a presidential candidate, if that's going to be a conflict. But if you do it with your podcast link, you actually can make money off those. We have an affiliate program right now where for every new member that signs up, you get a certain amount of that that contribution for the first year that person is a member. So it's actually really cool. That's, you know, Tom Woods and Dave Smith and Buck Johnson from Death to Tyrants and Pete Raymond from Free Man Beyond the Wall. I mean, these guys are all bringing tons of people. Tom Woods has far exceeded my recruiting numbers, far exceeded. And I've had at least 200 new members since August just through my link. So, you know, these guys are doing great and they're making good money too. So
that sounds like a challenge.
Yeah, it's cool though, man. Yeah, absolutely. It's fun. And it keeps track of it for you. You'll get you can get a nice little Excel spreadsheet sent to you from the executive director that shows you all the names and amount of people that you brought to the party, which is cool. And it, you know, gives you some bragging rights too, which is awesome.
Awesome. So is that open to anybody or just candidates or?
It's open to it's open to media. So anybody who's got any kind of media podcasts or any of that kind of stuff, you know, it's an affiliate link that you can basically embed in your website, and it's a personalized link. So every time someone signs up through it, it sends you an email personally and lets you know that you've signed up a new member. It sends us an email and lets us know that you signed up a new member, and they pay. I don't know how often they pay it out or whatever, but yeah, gets you paid too.
Awesome. Sounds good. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been awesome talking with you. Well, let me ask you, is taxation theft?
You're damn right it is.
All right. I'll catch you guys later. Thanks again for joining us. Taxation is theft. Visit taxationistheft.cards, berman2020.com. Of course, you know I'm running for president. We'll see you next time.
Pineapple belongs on pizza.
Damn right it does.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
Roads.